Okay, here we are again. Another month, another Core Audio.
Yeah.
Can humans change?
That's the main theme, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can humans change?
Can we evolve beyond war? Will wars ever end?
And
what do you say?
Can we get rid of violent tendencies?
What do you say? Take a stand.
I don't think we can get rid of violent tendencies, but we might be able to not act on our violent tendencies.
Really? You can imagine a world without war?
Yeah. Yeah, didn't John Lennon do that?
That's why we call you the Ringo Starr of deep English.
I don't know about that. I thought I might be more of the, I don't know. Who would I be? I don't know.
Ringo Starr.
No, I don't think so. You're definitely the George Harrison.
So, I heard about this survey where they just stopped loads of people on the street and they asked them, do you think that one day humans will, do you think wars will end one day?
Right.
And apparently from the 80s, they've been doing this survey for a long time. And since the 80s, the people have gotten really pessimistic.
Oh, really?
It used to be something like, you know, maybe a third would say, yes, one day I believe wars will end. Mm-hmm. And since the 80s, it's gone down to 10%. Only 1 out of 10 believe that, we'll be able to evolve beyond our violent tendencies.
I wonder if that is correlated with the rise in access to information.
What do you mean?
Well, like people are a lot more aware now of conflicts around the world. They get more news and information about bad things that are happening. Maybe they've seen so many negative things that have taken place that they lose their optimism. I don't know.
Yeah, I that's a good question. Are they? I mean, if we back up a little bit, are they more aware, or are they just being shown more sensationalist, violent news?
Right.
That makes them feel that the world is getting worse.
Yeah, I wonder. Yeah, I wonder.
Yeah, you know, when they look over a stretch of history, I think now things are better than they ever have been in terms of
quality of
war,
life,
violence, right. Murder, infant mortality,
I've read that too. Yeah,
disease.
Yeah, but it's hard to feel that.
Yeah, especially when we look on the news and we see so much horrible stuff.
Sure, almost every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the theme of the story, and we start off with Franz Stiegler.
He's the German ace fighter pilot, right?
Right, the one who mysteriously felt some moment of compassion and mercy,
right,
up there in the skies when facing his enemy, when seeing his enemy was crippled and on its last legs.
And interestingly, he was on the verge of earning some kind of achievement or some kind of medal. All he needed was one more kill or
the Knight's Cross.
That's what it's called.
Apparently, that's some big deal medal
in Germany.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if it still is, but
at that time.
Yeah, he was one if he shot down one more plane.
Yeah.
And apparently he never did.
Oh, he never did. Beyond that. That was his last.
I don't remember when the date was. I wonder if this was towards the end of the war or do you remember the date?
No, I don't. No.
Yeah.
I don't.
Or was this actually the start of some, you know, turning point for him where he couldn't kill people anymore?
Interestingly. Yeah, interestingly.
But so you know he wasn't somebody who wanted to get into the war to begin with.
Right.
Even though, you know, he had this history, his father was a fighter pilot in World War I, and his brother was a fighter pilot, and it was only when his brother died that he, you know, he wanted revenge.
Yeah.
So it's odd that he looked over at these enemy soldiers and he saw the face of his brother.
Right.
So it's really strange that at that moment He saw his brother when, in fact, he got into the war to get revenge for his brother's death.
Right.
Could this be what we all might, you know, hopefully see in the future when we look across a battlefield and see our brother
Yeah, I just wonder what it takes to actually get there, to actually have that moment where you look at the quote unquote enemy and you see either yourself or your kin or your loved ones, or you feel that sense of brotherhood or humanity.
Right.
And that causes you to lose that desire to kill. And actually, I'm assuming that there is a desire to kill. I think from what I've read about war, and of course neither of us have been in war, that very few people who are soldiers actually do want to kill. They're just forced into it, and they're in those situations where they have to pull the trigger. And I guess sometimes they don't even try to aim. They will pull the trigger to actually miss in the heat of battle.
They'll purposely shoot over the heads of the enemy. It's, I think, often with soldiers who are first going into battle. Mm-hmm. That's really common.
Yeah. But
Franz, he was a decorated, experienced fighter pilot.
That's
and
right.
all of a sudden he's feeling compassion, for the enemy.
Yeah.
But he really was putting it all on the line there. He could have been arrested for treason and mm-hmm. executed.
Yeah.
If that had come out.
What did happen to him after this incident?
Well, apparently he never told anyone, and I don't think the story ever got out.
But didn't they see him flying his plane near their plane?
Well, I mean, it was
some
anti-aircraft, infantry on
okay.
the ground, and it never went anywhere, never got
any legs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he really risked it all, and he kept his mouth shut for good reason. Mm-hmm. And Charlie Brown was ordered to keep his mouth shut.
Yeah,
which also, we were talking earlier about how this story reminds us of the Christmas truce,
right? That took place in World War. That was maybe World War One. Can you remember if it was World War One? I think it was World War One.
Yeah, it was trench warfare, so that would be World War One.
In France.
Right.
And it was between was it the French and the Germans, or was it the British and the Germans? I can't remember.
I think it was French and the Germans.
French and the Germans.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think there were some other Allied forces too.
Yeah. We did a listening fluency on that. And they ended up playing soccer and having a feast together or something like
Over
that.
Over Christmas they put their weapons down and all of a sudden they had a party.
And they got in lots of trouble for it.
Yeah. So similar to this story of Franz Stiegler, or with Charlie Brown's superiors telling him to keep his mouth shut.
Mm.
The Christmas truce, the superiors were also very unhappy.
Yeah.
And did not want any sense of brotherhood or having compassion for the other side.
Right. But didn't Franz's superior, or was it his father, give him some kind of advice, like never to shoot down someone in a parachute?
His commander, yes.
His commander, yeah.
Yes. And I was thinking about that, It really is something different to let a plane escape, versus not shooting at somebody in a parachute. Somebody in a parachute
is helpless,
right. And they're no threat at all, and
right.
they probably will be captured
once
when
they
land.
Yeah.
A plane can return back and get fixed up and come attack
and
again.
Head out again.
So I'm sure Franz would have been in big trouble.
Right.
If that story had gone
What I
out.
Like about the story is that these two men who didn't know each other from a man in the moon, and in that incident, they created some kind of lifelong bond.
Yeah,
from
apparently...
just a few moments of this incident that could have gone either way. It could have been a life-ending incident especially for the American Charlie Brown, and They remembered each other and got in touch with each other. They made an effort to get back in touch.
Yeah, yeah. And they became best friends from what I hear. Charlie Brown by that time was probably in his late 60s and mm-hmm. Franz was in his 70s.
Right.
And they became super close.
Wow. They traveled around together,
they traveled around giving talks for 20 years.
Wow.
It made me kind of wonder if Charlie Brown maybe got a little tired of hearing the story.
Oh.
After a while, I wonder if he was like, all right, Franz, you saved my life. I got it. Let's Can we talk about on. Something
let's,
else?
Let's do something else, please.
No, I'm sure he really appreciated it. And it wasn't just him. It was him and two other crew members.
Right.
So
right,
these
right.
three crew members survived when, 30,000 U.S. airmen died.
Yeah, they perished.
During World War II, mm-hmm. which, of course, was just a small sliver of
the
all the deaths during World War II.
Right.
And of those three men, apparently, they had 27 descendants. So 27 lives
wow,
came
really?
Into the world.
27 from those three.
Through that act of mercy of Franz during the war.
Wow.
And then our other story was about baboons.
That's right, baboons. They were not fighter pilots. They were more like
but they
food
are,
bandits.
They
right?
are fighters.
Oh,
though.
They're definitely fighters.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You sound like you've had some experience.
Well, I have had a bit of experience with monkeys.
Uh-huh.
Monkeys. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Monkeys. I've had my share of.
Well, I was attacked once by monkeys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
up
right.
Up on the mountain.
What happened?
Well, I was walking alone in the forest early in the morning,
uh-huh.
and I was on a trail and in a ravine,
uh-huh.
and I heard some commotion up in the trees way up the mountain,
uh-huh.
and I proceeded to watch about 80 monkeys come down the side of the mountain,
uh-huh.
and it was really amazing. It was awesome. I mean, I stood there and just watched, this giant troop of monkeys, and they suddenly just surrounded me. They were everywhere. And that had not been the first time that I had had an encounter like that here in the mountains around Kyoto.
Yeah.
But that particular time, some big males, alpha males, one got on the trail in front of me and one was in back, and I had nowhere to go to the side. And they were, one of them was approaching me, so I started walking in the direction of the one in front of me and passed very close by him. And he was trying not to make eye contact with me, and I was trying to do the same with him, because I've heard that, you make eye contact with monkeys, it gets them excited.
Uh-huh.
They don't like it.
Uh-huh.
And as soon as I passed him, and I'm talking about just a meter away,
uh-huh.
he was very close, he's a big monkey.
Uh-huh.
And they both started coming after me.
Uh-huh.
And then suddenly out of the tree, another one just leaped at me.
Whoa.
Screaming, ah, and teeth baring, and
whoa.
My heart just leapt right out of my mouth. And I started running, and they were all three of them like screaming at me and chasing me.
Uh-huh.
And I just ran up the trail as fast as I could. Uh-huh. And they were right on my heels the whole way.
Were you
I was
alone?
Totally frightened, man.
Were you alone?
I was alone. Yeah, I was alone. And
how long did they chase you for?
It seemed like an eternity, but it was probably only 10 or 15 seconds.
Uh-huh.
But it seemed like a really
uh-huh.
long time, and I was super scared.
Uh-huh.
But the interesting thing about it was that I had been doing like a walking meditation.
Yeah.
I was purposely putting myself in a peaceful state of mind.
Uh-huh.
But when that happened, my whole biochemistry and my mindset totally changed. And I was pure adrenaline. I was ready to flee or fight.
Uh-huh.
And I was very agitated the rest of the day.
It
was quite a harrowing experience.
Monkeys.
Yeah, monkeys. Yeah.
Monkeys.
But I realized afterward there were baby monkeys in the troop, and they just wanted me out of there. That's all.
Right.
They weren't interested
right.
in attacking
me. Tell the truth. Were these three monkeys babies that chased you?
Okay. Actually, yeah, they were the baby monkeys, the alpha males.
They're alpha
they
babies.
The babies on me.
Alpha babies.
And their little monkey nappies. They came after me. It was frightening.
Did you ever look up what the correct response if you have to deal with monkeys?
I don't think the correct response is to when a troop of 80 monkeys are coming in your direction is just to stand there and smile. I think
you didn't look up what you're supposed to do though. With bears, you're supposed to get big. You're supposed to get as big as possible
with monkeys,
and never
I
run
think
away.
They, I did what I was probably they wanted me to do was just get out of there.
Right.
I mean, that's what they wanted. I didn't know that at the time.
Right.
I just did what felt like the right thing to do in the moment, which was run as fast as I could.
Right.
So
back to the story, this guy, Sapolsky, this professor, this Stanford professor, he I think we don't go into it in the story, but his actual main research focus is the effects of stress in humans.
Ah.
And he what better way, in his view, what better way to research this but through baboons?
Right.
Because he was looking at the effect of violence, aggression, and hierarchy on creating stress.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, baboons are perfect for looking at this.
Right.
And so he was taking blood samples and looking at their blood pressure and their brain chemistry and mm-hmm. other signs of stress.
Right.
Which sure enough he could see very clearly. And then when these baboons found their treasure trove of garbage, all of a sudden a lot of the stress in their society decreased.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, there still was plenty of violence.
Sure.
Because they're fighting over that.
Over food, that, over a resource. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that
just like America, like people fight over resources, oil and money, et cetera.
Yeah.
Sure.
And this treasure of garbage was their undoing and made them sick and had all of the alpha males. Interestingly, it was the alpha males that got wiped out.
Right.
Because at least with Robert's favorite troop
mm-hmm.
of baboons, it was the alpha males that were fighting their way in.
And they were the first to have contact with that virus or whatever it was that made them sick, right?
Yeah. So there's two troops of baboons. One troop lived over the garbage dump,
right.
And then there was Robert's troop that had to fight to get in there every day, grab a bunch of drumsticks and cake, and then hightail it back to their troop.
Right.
And so when this tuberculosis devastated the troop mm-hmm. that lived at the garbage dump, Robert's troop, it was only the alpha males that got hurt. So they died, and all of a sudden, you know, these alpha males who were controlling a lot of the culture
mm-hmm.
of aggression
were
and
gone.
Violence
they were, totally
was, were gone, and a lot of the hierarchy broke down.
Yeah.
And that's why Robert was, you know, thought, I can't do this research anymore. Like,
right.
My research is on how hierarchy and aggression deals with stress, so I'm out of here.
Right.
And he took off for 6 years. He could see, okay, things are totally changing. They're not acting normal.
Right.
They're, you know, they're building these social bonds, and there's not the regular amount of fighting, and they're grooming each other, and they're taking care of each other, and they're not bullying each other, and like, this is not
Where's
good for my research.
Where's the interest in that, right? This is not exciting anymore.
So he left to go look for some typical baboons to study. 6 years later,
he comes back. Yeah.
And not only does he see all of this new culture of pacifism is still continuing, but he, weirder than that, he notices that all the males in that troop are new.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, apparently, you know, adolescent baboons,
they take off.
They just take off.
Yeah, they take
off.
They
and they go find
place.
A new troop. And when they find a new troop, usually it's really bad for them. They get really bullied, and none of the females will come near them.
Right.
Because if the females come near a new baboon, then the alpha male in that troop
jumps in
will
and,
come and beat up both the new guy and the woman.
Right.
But that didn't exist anymore. So these new baboons were coming into the troop, and all of a sudden they were being treated really good.
And they're like, "Hey, I like this place."
And you would think
what would happen
would be like, "I like this place. I'm going to be the new alpha male." But
but that's not what happened. Right?
That's not what happened.
Right.
They were watching what was happening in this culture, and they were assimilating.
Right.
So, that's what amazed Sapolsky and a lot of people that. That's not happening over generations. That's one generation.
Yeah, that's just one generation.
Within a generation, have a culture and behavior and aggression and violence change that much.
What I find fascinating about this is the fact that when the context changed, maybe some of these baboons, in the presence of an alpha male, their behavior is it becomes more like reactive to the presence of this you know violent energy, and it in turn makes them a lot more agitated and violent in their daily lives. I mean, they have to defend themselves, they have to be careful, they're always you know wary of a threat, you know, and from this hierarchy, and in the absence of that, they actually are reverting back to a more perhaps natural state, in the sense that maybe they're deep down, these baboons are sort of meant to be peaceful and grooming and caring for each other. I mean, perhaps that's the case. And so when I start thinking about human beings, I wonder how much of our violence and the people who are being violent and perpetrating certain crimes or acting in violent ways toward other people, I wonder how much of that is contextual. And if the context were different, those people would be a lot more relaxed and a lot more chilled out and maybe a little bit nicer to people. I mean,
if we just all had more garbage in our lives, that could change. That maybe that's what John Lennon was talking about when he said imagine.
Well, it wasn't so much the garbage, was it? It was more the tuberculosis. I mean, maybe it's just about getting
rid of all the bad guys.
Getting rid of the alpha males or finding a new thing for them to do that's not harmful. Yeah. I don't know. That's I get the feeling that Donald Trump is not one of the groomers.
No, no, and I don't think Hillary Clinton is either.
No, so
Bernie Sanders, on the other hand, but I think that's a lost deal, isn't it? A lost cause.
Yeah.
Well, may peace be with you, my baboon brother.
Yeah.
Until next time.
Yeah, I think you're looking a little bit more like a baboon these days than I am.
All right. So. I think we're done here. How rude. How dare you, sir? How dare you?
It's the facial hair.
All right. Until next time.
All right, man. See you.